Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the VIG Sports Breakfast Summer Edition this Tuesday, the 18th of January. World number one, Ash Barty. She's successfully kicked off her Australian Open campaign last night at Rod Laver Arena, cruising into the second round with a comfortable straight sets victory, 6-0, 6-1 over Ukrainian qualifier Lycia Cyrenko. Took just 54 minutes for her to go through, and she remains on track for a fourth round meeting. It seems as though she will, I guess, be eyeing off against Naomi Osaka, the defending champion. Good morning to all of our listeners this morning, and good morning, Jamie Rogers and Adam Pengelly.
Yeah, good morning, Adam. Good morning, Ryan, and good morning to all of our listeners. Just on Naomi, she spoke after her win talking about how she's superstitious and she won't walk on the lines or the Melbourne logo on the court, and that all her bottles have to be in a straight line, because I think people were questioning why she was hopping around that Melbourne logo off the back, but a good win by her.
Do you have any
well.
Superstitions when you're going out into the water? You have to put your goggles on before you.
I don't think it's superstitious, but I always panic. I'm like constantly trying to make sure that my goggles aren't foggy before I put them on. And then I quickly take them off and do it again. But that's not because I'm superstitious. I just panic.
You know what a weird superstition I have, Adam, is when I go to buy the best bets, yes. I never take the best bets from the top of the pile.
Really?
Because I feel like someone else has touched it and it's unlucky.
So do you have to take the second one in the pile, or do you go right to the bottom?
I try to go probably about a third from the bottom. Stupid, I know, but we've all got our little superstitions,
don't
we?
A lot of punters are like that, don't they? And you'll see in racing, a lot of trainers and owners will like to watch races in a very particular position. They don't like to be annoyed by other people. Are you like that, Jamie? Have you been like that previously? Or do you just watch the race wherever you can find a vantage
point? I just watch the race wherever I can find a good vantage point.
Yeah. It's funny you talk about Naomi Osaka, because Rafa Nadal's like that as well, isn't he?
Very much so.
He refuses to walk on the lines when he walks to the chair after in between breaks a game. So it's quite fascinating. A lot of professional athletes like that.
Well, I know a lot of people get annoyed with Rafa Nadal constantly pulling the undies out of his bum. Mm. But do you know that there's a superstition around that as well?
Or is it a habit that's
now
happened?
No, so apparently he wore his cousin's underpants or something when he was under 12s or whatever, and he had a big win. So ever since then, he wears smaller underpants.
Oh, that's why he's always got a wedgie.
Yeah. Mm. So his underpants are probably two sizes too small for him. So that's a superstition with Rafael Nadal as well. It's funny, isn't it? But great to see Ash Barty going through. She'll now face Italian qualifier Lucia Bronzetti in the second round. Then most likely 30th seed Camilla Giorgi. But that's how you want to start an Australian Open campaign.
Yeah, she was ruthless, wasn't she, last night, Ryan? Almost could have got the double bagel for a while there. It was 6-love, 5-love at one stage. You're thinking, oh. But Cyrenko would have been a tricky opponent for her on paper, because she played Ash Barty a few years ago at the Australian Open, took a set off her in the first set and forced Ash to three sets. But it just appears to me that the stars are aligning. I know it's only early in the tournament. There's a long way to go, but she's just in probably career best form at the moment and right now, and that was a really impressive display last night.
Sport often throws up a blooming peacock one day, feather duster the next, and that was the case with Tanasi Kokkinakis, wasn't it? After his terrific maiden ATP title in Adelaide, he looked pretty lethargic. He was error prone. He went down in straight sets to German qualifier Yannick Hanfmann. It wasn't the Tanasi that we saw just days prior.
No, but if you think about the injuries he's overcome and how much tennis he's missed, to go from winning the ATP in Adelaide to backing it up literally 2 days later, surely his body would have been feeling it yesterday. Mm. He was probably just really excited as well just to be back on the court at the Australian Open. It was a shame he couldn't continue that fairy tale run from what we'd seen.
Because we wanted to see him play Rafa Nadal, didn't we, in the second round?
Yeah, but I think he was a bit gassed off the back of Adelaide. But well done as well to John Millman, who got through in four sets. And that was a really gutsy win by him. I think James Duckworth will probably be pretty bit disappointed about his loss. I think that was probably a
match he should have won.
Yeah, I think that was probably a match in his head that he thought, I could get that win. But he did battle hard. He just, unfortunately, didn't get through.
Just back on Kokkinakis for a minute. If you said to him at the start of the Australian summer, you're going to be knocked out in the first round of the Australian Open, but you can win your first ATP title at Adelaide, I think he probably would have taken it. Don't you think?
Absolutely, because that's his home court as well.
Home court, absolutely. I mean, it's good to get one on the board, but gee, I'm sure all of these Aussies really look forward to the Australian Open playing in front of those big crowds, don't
well,
they?
Well, there's a new star for all of us to keep an eye on, Alex Vukic, who rallied back to claim a four-set win. Now, he's ranked 144 in the world, and he took down that number 30 seed, Lloyd Harris. So that's an Aussie we all need to get behind there, and he's just said that's a dream come true.
Now, there's 12 Aussies in action on day two. Darius Saville will take on Rebecca Peterson. Robin Anderson from the US will take on Sam Stosur. This may be her last Australian Open as well, which, you know, obviously she's had a wonderful career. It'd be nice to see her at least get a win on the board and celebrate for one last time in front of an Aussie crowd.
I was going to say, she's been a great ambassador for Australian tennis. Not only Australian tennis, probably Australian sport as well. I know she hasn't had the success in the singles format in the last sort of 5 or 6 years of her career, but she's forever going to be remembered for that US Open final win over Serena Williams, won't she? She'll be able to say she beat Serena Williams in her own backyard. So let's hope that Sam can have some success today. I think she said that she's going to keep playing doubles later this year, but this is probably going to be a final Australian Open, regardless of what happens later this year.
Yeah, Chris O'Connell will take on Hugo Gaston from France. Madison Inglis will take on Leila Fernandez from Canada. Steve Johnson, the American, will take on Jordan Thompson. Priscilla Hahn will take on Marketa Vondrousova. We've got Astra Sharma taking on Clara Torsen. Alex Poprin taking on Arthur Rinderkench, I think it is, from France. Apologies to Arthur. Alejandro Davidovich Fekina from Spain taking on Alex Bolt. Storm Sanders, this will be a terrific match, taking on Anya Sabalenka, who is the second seed. And we heard Roger Rashid talk about that matchup yesterday. So hopefully a good performance there from Storm Sanders. Alex De Minaur, looking forward to Alex, who is seeded in this draw at 32 against Lorenzo Musetti. And Nick Kyrgios later tonight against Liam Brody. Obviously, we saw Nick bow out, or would not pull out, rather, of the Sydney International last week with COVID. So it's an interesting preparation coming into an Australian Open.
I will be interested to see how Nick does bounce back off after having a COVID diagnosis, just to see how his lungs go. Although Rafael Nadal has recently overcome COVID as well, and he's, as we saw yesterday, he's looking pretty good. And Liam Brody came out yesterday just saying anyone who thinks there's going to be an asterisk next to the winner for the Australian Open are absolutely mad. And he just listed off all the top players that are still there, that yes, Novak Djokovic isn't there, but Liam Brody believes this is still a tough Australian Open and you shouldn't have an asterisk next to your name.
Yeah, and I think the asterisk, though, for a lot of fans will be the likability of a lot of these players. I mean, Daniil Medvedev, great player. He's a very unlikable player. I think I think that needs to be said. It's not like I'm saying it for the first time. Alexander Zverev, you know, he's a fine player. But Rafael Nadal really is the only player recognisable to the tennis fan that you can probably easily get behind.
But Tsitsipas.
Yeah, Tsitsipas is quite popular as well, obviously, with the Greek community. But, you know, it just misses that Roger Federer and those real personalities that we're used to. So, oh, look, on that score, I'm cheering Rafa. Look, I'd love to see Rafa win the Australian Open. It probably hasn't been his surface and his tournament in years gone by, but Novak Djokovic obviously won't be there, will he? And we saw him get off the plane in Dubai. There were fans asking photos there. But some big news, Jamie, that we spoke about this yesterday, didn't it? What precedent Australia's actions will take on the world stage, and maybe it's informed a decision for the French Open.
Well, not just the French Open, but France has changed there. They've passed a new COVID vaccine law. This just happened on Sunday. So now a recent COVID infection doesn't give you exemption to enter into indoor facilities, which includes sporting arenas. And they've basically said athletes and spectators need to be fully vaxxed until further notice. Although what has been pointed out is there is an election the month before the French Open, so perhaps those rules might change. However, he does look like he's going to be facing some tough opposition when he goes to France, because they've made it very clear they want to make it difficult for the unvaxxed. The only place he looks like he'll be able to comfortably play is at Wimbledon. US, you've got to be fully vaxxed to enter the country if you're a foreign traveller. But the UK, it's just a 10 days in quarantine.
The French sports minister did come out last night saying that he thinks Novak will probably be able to play at Roland Garros. Obviously be under a different set of rules and maybe in some sort of bubble, I suppose, for the French Open. But that's a positive sign for him. But yeah, it's going to be difficult, isn't it? He's so close to this record, Ryan. This is the thing that gets me. He's so close to getting this record of being the greatest of all time. Is he going to throw it all away?
Play at the French Open, do you think he will just go get vaxxed? Get to a point where you think,
I think the genie's out of the bottle now. I mean, whether he likes it or not, he's become a poster child for anti-vaxxers, hasn't he? I'm sure that's probably not going to be at the forefront of his decision making, but I think because he has been, well, I wouldn't say he's been overly vocal. In fact, for a lot of times he played mum on whether he was vaxxed or unvaxxed. Mm. But I think his actions, particularly in light of coming here to Australia, pretty much did thumb his nose a little bit at vaccination around COVID and maybe his views on the whole thing.
He's gone so far down the road now, he can't turn back, can he?
No.
You wouldn't think so.
No.
Like, as much as the record is there and his legacy is on the line to an extent, he's drawn the line in the sand, hasn't he?
Yeah.
You wouldn't think he's going to change now.
Yeah. Now, the Aussies obviously coming off that excellent fifth test win in Hobart, and the streets of Adelaide were pumping yesterday with the Aussies partying and celebrating that victory. It was terrific to see, wasn't it?
Did you see some of the videos, Ryan? It was great to see, wasn't it? A few of the players took some shots. I think they were celebrating outdoors in a beer garden at Salamanca down there somewhere. The market's near there. And she's had a good time, didn't they? You'd love to be just a member of the public, just sitting there in an outside beer garden drinking with a few of the Australian players. I think Nathan Lyon was in full flight, if we can put it in those terms. Yeah. Steve Smith was there, and obviously Alex Carey and David Warner. So they had a great time. I even think members of the Barmy Army were there as well. Isn't it great to see professional athletes just mingling with members of the public, having a good time, behaving themselves, and just enjoying the camaraderie and community spirit that's been around and around this series?
It's the first thing I thought too, Jamie. I mean, often when we see celebrities and sports stars, they get the red rope treatment, don't they? They'll go to a nightclub and section themselves off from people. But to be there in a beer garden, it looked like, and just, you know, having a celebration and a beer with Australian fans was terrific to see.
And all singing, "We are the champions," or as David Warner has said to Nathan Lyon, "If you're 4-0 up, you stand up." So it looks like they had a lot of fun. But what was also nice, Usman Khawaja apparently texted Pat Cummins off the back. Remember how we spoke about it yesterday, how they were doing the celebrations of spraying the champagne, and due to his Muslim faith, he had to jump off the stage. And then Pat told everyone to put the bottles down so that Khawaja could come back on. And apparently he texted Pat and said, "Thank you so much for being aware and still getting me to be included." Well,
you mentioned that yesterday morning, didn't you, Jamie? And it was interesting to see a lot of people following up your comments yesterday morning on social media. Mm. A lot of people really echoed your sentiments of just what a gesture it was from Pat Cummins and what a classy captain he's been. It's just another ingredient to why we're supporting this Australian cricket team. And I think it's under great young leadership with Pat Cummins. And we're going to see for years to come, I think, a great representation of this Australian cricket side led by a terrific young man.
He's done absolutely nothing wrong so far, has he, Ryan? Maybe apart from declaring a little bit too late in the Sydney Test. But even as part of those celebrations yesterday in Hobart, did you notice that Nathan Lyon asked him at one stage, "Can we sing the team song?" There must have been a request from a member of the public to sing the team song. And Pat sort of said, no, mate, no. Now's not the time to do that. We do that in our own, after a test match, after a win, in the dressing room. We don't do that in public. And I thought that was a really mature, sensible response from Pat Cummins. And he's been a breath of fresh air as captain, it must be said.
Yeah, big show coming up today. We're going to be talking to Bjorn Baker before 7 o'clock. Of course, one of Sydney's and New South Wales' best trainers. He's been up there on the Magic Millions. We can talk about some of his charges and find a winner or two. Terrific to have Craig Fitzgibbon, Cronulla Sharks coach, on the show this morning to talk about his new recruits and his expectations for season 2022. Roger Rashid will talk about the Australian Open Day 2 action. That's just before 8 o'clock. Brad Davidson also hopefully will find us a few winners. Dan Smith, the Sydney Thunder assistant coach, they're currently third on the BBL ladder and looking certainly to play finals and maybe even get that automatic passage through if they can finish second on the ladder. We'll talk to him just after 8 o'clock. DJ Velasevic from the Sydney Kings, a young superstar that is a future Boomers prospect for sure and certain. We'll talk about the Sydney Kings and just what is going wrong with them at the moment. It's the Big Sports Breakfast Summer Edition. We want you to be part of the program as well. 1353 53. Give us an SMS 0419 767 272. Cricket is making headlines today in the Australian. An interesting article from Peter Lola and Ben Horn talking about Justin Langer and his chances of holding on to the top job as Australian coach. He's been getting great support Most importantly, from a lot of ex-players like Ricky Ponting, who says there is absolutely no way that Justin Langer should not have his contract renewed. We're hearing that it could be as early as the end of this week. We might have an answer. But most interestingly, a current assistant coach, Andrew McDonald, who's been touted as the favourite to take over the job if Langer doesn't have his contract renewed, we're hearing that he has no interest in the top job. So even though Trevor Bayliss, the Sydney Thunder coach, is being mooted as a possible candidate also, the fact that Andrew McDonald doesn't want that, that's maybe in some ways a bit of support for Justin Langer, or at least, you know, not that he's publicly coming out and saying anything, but this is what we're hearing. You know, maybe that isn't a bit of an endorsement of Justin Langer.
Well, he was tipped to be the favourite to take over the reins if Justin Langer's contract wasn't renewed. And it is expected to be decided before the tour of Pakistan of what happens. And I know Pat Cummins has come out and said, we just need to know so that we can all then move on. But it's just incredible to think we're speaking about someone whose job isn't secure after seeing so much success.
It hasn't been a resounding endorsement from the Australian captain or the cricket team. They've played a really straight bat, to use a cricket term, as far as questions about Justin Langer as coach. It hasn't been a firm backing from the playing group.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what they're saying in private though, Ryan, wouldn't it? To Nick Hockley and the Cricket Australia CEO. We did mention yesterday that Pat Cummins' tone changed significantly from the Boxing Day test in Melbourne to after day two in Hobart, when he said the players loved having JL around. But how long can Cricket Australia let this drag out? Don't they want to get sorted as quickly as possible before they go to Pakistan? If Justin Langer does leave the position, well, then they're going to need to find an interim replacement, aren't they? So, but the support coming from people like Ricky Ponting, Steve Waugh, it's probably expected to an extent, given they're close to Justin Langer. He's been a former teammate of theirs, but I'd like to think it'll be a decision pretty soon.
But I thought the comment from Darren Lehman, former Australian coach, was interesting. Yes. In his mind, he believes 4 to 5 years is enough. So maybe it's time that if Justin Langer doesn't get renewed, that Cricket Australia goes, well, you know what? This is how we're going to play things moving forward, that the tenure will be no longer than 5 years. That could be a way they'll go in the future.
It will also be interesting to see if they decide to split the role too. The back page of the Daily Telly is the same article as what you just mentioned, Ryan. Count me out. McDonald call puts Langer in the box seat. Let's get this party started. Not surprising to see Ash Barty, our world number one, making the back page of the Daily Telegraph. And also some of the articles in there is about that Australian wildcard, Alex Vukic, who rallied back to claim that four-set win.
In the Sydney Morning Herald, they've taken a bit of a different tone. Langer still lacks key support of top players. Andrew Wu's written a story saying Justin Langer's coaching fate is expected to be decided before Australia's mooted test tour of Pakistan, with key players unmoved on their stance on the coach despite the national men's team's recent success.
All right, so we'll see how that plays out. It's going to be a talking point until Cricket Australia makes a decision on Justin Langer for sure and certain. Give us a call this morning, 13 53 53, and SMS as well, 0419 767 272. We were talking about superstitions earlier, weren't we? This one coming through. Rafa has huge OCD. It's not superstition. Before every single rally, he pulls his undies out, puts his hair behind his ear, wipes his nose. When he serves, he walks in a certain pattern and bounces the ball around the same amount of times. Don't get me started on his routine. Between games and sets, he'll drink from certain bottles in the same order and place them in the exact spot every time. Doesn't walk in the court lines. That's just the start. Love the bloke, but he can certainly push the boundaries with the shot clock sometimes. It's frustrated other players as well. So there you go. That's a superstition when a listener and a fan can recount every single part of his process before every point in every game he plays. It's quite extraordinary superstitions, aren't they? So even the best in the business have them. Love them or hate them, they certainly make for interesting topics. Stay with us this morning on the Big Sports Breakfast. In the next half hour, Bjorn Baker, trainer of terrific horses here in New South Wales in Sydney. He's brought up big also from the Magic Millions. We'll be talking with him. Last night in the Big Bash, Adelaide Strikers defeated the Sydney Sixers by 8 wickets at Adelaide Oval. And Perth Scorchers, they are just flying this BBL season, defeating the Brisbane Heat by 6 wickets. That was at Marvel Stadium. In the golf yesterday, Masters champion Hideki Matsuyama, what a win this was, taking out the Sony Open in Hawaii in a playoff. He had an eagle on the first extra hole to beat American Russell Henley in Honolulu. It was a terrific shot too, about a 270-yard shot into the pin, which I think landed about a metre from the pin for an eagle putt. So well done to Hideki Matsuyama. The Australians falling well short, I think, in that tournament. Hopefully they can get things in gear when it comes to the Masters, which isn't too far away. Of course, Cam Smith winning last week in Hawaii as well, going great guns. And in the NFL, a couple of matches that we didn't get to the final scores on the show yesterday. San Francisco defeated Dallas 23-17. And Kansas City defeated Pittsburgh 42-21. One match today, and that's Arizona taking on Los Angeles.
And the winner of today's match will go on and play the Buccaneers. So we'll keep an eye on that. And whether you love or hate the Dallas Cowboys, a game should never end the way that it did yesterday. And if you know any Dallas fans, I'd be buying them a drink today, because it came down to the final play of the match. And honestly, it left many people questioning what on earth happened.
Yeah. Very bizarre, wasn't it?
It was.
So what did happen? What actually
bizarre.
Happened?
Bizarre. So there was 14 seconds left in the fourth quarter, and the umpire comes running in to officially spot the ball as a player placed the ball down, which was a Cowboys player. Now, it was considered unready to play when Dallas first appeared ready to snap the ball. So the official then needs to spot it and at the correct location. And then ultimately at this point, the clock ran out. So they were getting ready to kick the ball. They're 6 points behind. There's 14 seconds to go and ultimately would have leveled the score.
Well, if you think the Dallas Cowboys were confused, I'm confused. I'm sure everyone's confused.
It was just baffling though. Anyone that was watching it, you're just watching and I rewound it to see what on earth had happened. And Dave and I sitting there going, what? Especially when they're like, and that's it, play's over. And everyone's standing on the field looking around thinking, what?
But there's no next week. That's your season.
They're out. And that's but imagine going out that way. That's the end of your season.
Are they still the most supported franchise in NFL, Dallas Cowboys? They've been hugely popular for so many years.
They are popular. Well, the 49ers will now face Green Bay, so that's going to be a tough task for them.
The Packers 49ers, Titans take on the Bengals, the Chiefs take on the Bills. That should be a good match, that one. And the Buccaneers will play the winner out of Arizona.
Patrick Mahomes was very impressive yesterday, 3 for 5 touchdowns for Kansas City.
Yeah, we're taking your calls this morning, 13-53-53. Let's go to the open line now. Good morning, Shane.
G'day, guys. How are you?
Very well. How are you?
Not bad. Jamie, Dallas didn't deserve the win anyway. They were terrible. And the biggest problem was that last play, you're supposed to hand the ball to the official, so he placed it. Dallas placed it themselves. They should know the rules better than that. But they were ordinary. They were never going to win it.
But you must have thought, though, Shane, at the time when you were watching all of that unfold, that was just a disappointing way for it all to end. Yeah, it was just weird.
They shouldn't have left themselves with only 14 seconds on the clock.
That is true.
They were ordinary. Look, the biggest winners on the weekend, Cincinnati Bengals, their first playoff win in 30 years, and they showed footage around Riverfront Stadium, 33 pubs in walking distance. Every one of them was chock-a-block. They thought they'd won the Super Bowl. Unfortunately, next week, they're not going to go any further. Tennessee will do a number on them. But the biggest story on the weekend was the Buffalo Bills flog of the New England Patriots. They absolutely manhandled them. It's New England's second biggest playoff loss in franchise history. They were terrible. They just got smashed. And the secret weapon for Buffalo, the players were great, but it was so cold. It was like wind chill factor of minus 10 degrees. But on the sideline, a couple of defensive players admitted to having a nip of scotch while they ran on the field. Now, the linemen, the defensive linemen, the offensive linemen, they're the craziest players on the field. In that sort of cold weather, they love to run on the field with short sleeves on, okay? The secret is they all smeared their arms with Tiger Balm before they ran on the field. That's a fact. But the biggest weapon they use, you know how they sit on the sidelines, they're all drinking the Gatorade? They replaced the Gatorade with chicken broth.
What?
Oh, that I can understand that, because it would have been warm.
Oh.
Well, they're all drinking cups of it during the quarters every time they...
That's not a refreshing drink that I'm thinking about when I'm playing sport out in the middle.
But it would be like a nice warm drink that would have been warming them up. And the only reason why I know that is because it's suggested to me for the English Channel to have things like a bone broth or a soup or something to have so it warms up your insides.
Yeah, people tell me pickle juice is good for a hangover as well. I've never drunk
pickle
it in my
juice
life.
Is also really good for cramping. Shane, what did you make? I thought Bill's quarterback, Josh Allen put together probably the best performance of his career.
Josh Allen looked sensational. New England beat him during the year and did bustle him, and the Bills reversed the games a few weeks back. But I still thought New England would have enough. But they actually just blew him away. Devin Singletary, the running back, looked sensational, and their defense. But whether or not they can go into Kansas next week, it won't be as cold. Mahomes looked pretty good like yesterday, but Fitzroy were ordinary. Look, at the moment, Brady wasn't even in second gear yesterday. He just did what he had to do against Philadelphia. He'll be ready for whoever he plays, whoever wins today. I'm still leaning towards Brady and the Buccaneers, but Buffalo's the new dark horse. I don't know what they're playing.
No, I haven't actually. I'll call that up. At the moment,
they are paying $5.50. They're the third pick behind the Packers and Chiefs.
Might be a nice little sneaky one there.
All right. Good on you, Shane. Thanks for your call. 1353 53, the open line number, the SMS 0419 767 272. Good morning, Rod.
Right, how are we?
Very well. How are you?
Well, I need to correct you there, Jamie.
Mm-hmm.
There was 14 seconds to go when Dallas ran the second last play, and Dak Prescott ran too far, actually. He should have went to his knee a lot earlier. There was about 3 seconds to go when he handed it to his teammate, he spiked the ball. If the referee was there, it still wouldn't have been enough time anyway. In the end, Dallas lost that game on two things. One, 15 penalties. Pathetic. Mm. Two, when the game started, with that massive crowd, they deferred. They gave San Francisco the ball, and on the first play of the game, they held the ball for about 6 minutes, and they scored a touchdown, which eventually, when you look at the game, led to them winning. If I was Dallas fan, I would be disappointed the way it ended, but I'd be more disappointed because they obviously had no faith in their offense to start the game like they should have. They should have started with the ball with a walking crowd behind them. If they got a touchdown early, God knows what would have happened.
Mm.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy your day.
Good on you, Rod. You too. And enjoy the rest of the NFL, which obviously continues this weekend. And, yeah, it's interesting with the Buccaneers and Tom Brady. You go back a few weeks ago with all the drama surrounding them. You were probably starting to write them off. But isn't it funny, just when it comes the pointy end of the season and finals time, you see a champion like Tom Brady start to hit his straps, and they've just got a real ominous feeling about them, don't they?
And he's 44. He's 44 years old and just had his 35th playoff win. I mean, and he doesn't look like he's getting any slower by any stretch.
No. Sacked a couple of times yesterday as well, just watching we were trying to watch it in between doing the show yesterday morning. He got sacked a couple of times as well. So he's still copying the physical punishment, but it's a remarkable he's still going at his age. It's quite amazing.
It sure is. We're going to be talking racing coming up after the break. Bjorn Baker has been up there at the Magic Millions buying up big. He's currently third on the New South Wales Trainers Premiership. He's having a terrific season. Well, he's had a terrific few years, hasn't he? Going absolutely great guns. So we'll be talking to Bjorn Baker coming up next. Give us an SMS 0419 767 272, the open line number 1353 53. Well, each and every season, the Bjorn Baker stable just goes from strength to strength. Last season, finishing third on the New South Wales Trainers Premiership. That's actually the same position he is right now with 56 winners. And he'll look to add to that this week with a number of nominations coming up around New South Wales. And he's, well, I think just come back. I'm sure he'd be back from the Gold Coast by now. Good morning, Bjorn.
Yeah, just come back. It's been ten days, I must say. And, the drive home and back into it this morning.
It would be exhausting for a bloke like you. I mean, yeah, sure, the sales are one thing, but, gee, you're an entertaining bloke. No one entertains racing clients better than you. I'm sure it's been a busy week.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Seems to be getting harder every year, but it is. You meet a lot of people up there, obviously, at the Magic Millions, and still probably not quite as busy as it's been in previous years. But good to see some familiar faces, get up there amongst it, and with the racing and, I guess, sales and social part of it. And then we've been under, it's been, just listening, even then, a lot of cancellations with COVID and so forth. That's put everything under pressure. So it's been definitely a demanding couple of weeks, but great to be involved and especially pick up some nice horses.
Do you remember when you won the Magic Millions with Unencumbered, going back to 2014, and someone asked you the next day, how are you feeling? I think your response was, I'm just trying to concentrate on breathing.
Yeah. It's what I'm feeling a bit like at the moment for different reasons. But no, that was definitely a very important part of my career in Australia. So, no, very important. And from then it sort of followed on. Magic Millions is always probably the most important sale for me. So I like to get there and get a few numbers banked away. And I think this year we've gone up another notch and got some really quality horses.
How many did you buy, Bjorn?
Oh, I think about 13 all up. So it was a good bunch. And no, definitely some really nice mixture of fillies and colts. And yeah, it's a good start to the sales season.
Bjorn, Jamie here. Talk to us about Parry Sound, how it pulled up after finishing fourth in the Magic Million Sub-Zero.
Yeah, he went a good race. He's only beaten a bit over a length, but he's come through well. I guess sort of you always like to win a race or two on Magic Millions Day, and he was probably my best chance. But he still went a great race. He's come through well, and I think he'll be better for it.
Let's look forward to the Carrington Stakes, Bjorn, on the weekend. Prime candidate. He was super winning that Christmas Classic at Canterbury last start. How's he tracking towards the Carrington Stakes at Randwick on the weekend?
Yeah, thrilled with him in the Carrington Stakes. I think it's a good race for him. Of course, he was really good at Canterbury. He had to absorb some pressure. And if a horse ever deserved to win a stakes race, it was him. So 1,400 at Randwick should suit really well. He looks great and he's been up for a while, but he's handling everything very well.
Another horse I see you've got in the nominations for Saturday. He's actually a favourite of mine, Bjorn. He just... Every start, he seems to be a horse that flies under the radar, but, gee, so honest is Matawakapi. I think that's how you pronounce it anyway. I say it different every time I back it. But,
yeah, and he definitely, the last prep, that was the case, and he often takes one or two runs to get back to his best. And I think we'll probably save him for Saturday week. I think the 1,100's probably on the short side for him. But even though he only went fair first up, I think he's definitely in for a good preparation, especially once he gets into that sort of hit zone of sort of 1,400.
I think one of the finds, Bjorn, of the Sydney Summer so far has been Rule of Law. He's been awesome winning his last three straight. What are you sort of thinking in time frame? Where's his level going to be?
Oh, I guess that's the big question. And he galloped this morning and went very well, albeit easily. And he... is nommed on Saturday. We'll probably lean towards going Saturday week, the 29th, in a benchmark 88-1200 with McDonald on. So that'll be a good tester. That's just below stakes grade. Then we'll have to have a... Hopefully he puts a few questions in our head whether we sort of kick on or maybe save him for the spring. But he's done a remarkable job for a cheap online purchase.
What about what you've accepted for this week, Bjorn? Is there anything that stands out that we can steer the punters into, perhaps even tomorrow at Newcastle?
Oh, I think Omudgee actually galloped really well this morning. He surprised a few last week, but I think he's improved from that win. And oh, I'll tell you what, if ever a horse deserves to win, it's probably Canasta. So he'll go another really, really good race. But... yeah, they're probably the pick of them. We've got a few chances there. Bring the Ransom as well. She's in the 1,400. I think she's continued to improve. She ran a close third a couple of weeks ago, big odds, but she's going the right way. Mm-hmm.
Just the one horse I wanted to ask about, Bjorn, before we let you go, is She's Ideal. She had a great preparation last spring, making it all the way to the Melbourne Cup, running top 10. It was a huge thrill for you to have a horse in the Melbourne Cup alongside your father, Murray, as well. What's a lot of plans for her? I imagine a preparation based around the Sydney Cup.
Yeah, I'm not sure. We're just sort of... it's a bit of a tricky one. And she galloped well this morning and she's going to trial on the 24th. So we'll just see sort of how she goes initially. She's going to be nominated everywhere and it's one of those ones we may even keep her to the short courses a little bit. You could argue that possibly her best run last spring was even in the Winx Stakes over 1,400 first up, where she was sort of just beaten for a close third. So it's a little bit of a tough one, and no plan as yet is set.
We were talking yesterday about the Golden Slipper. It seems like it's such an open picture at the moment for that slipper. Have you got a little 2-year-old you're hiding away at home ready to, I suppose, to unfurl in the next few weeks?
No, it's one job I don't have to worry about this year. It's the second acceptances today. So there's none of mine are quite there. And I'm confident I've got a few purchases over the last week that are going to give us a live hope next year.
Bjorn, as I mentioned when I intro'd you, it's just been a growth year on year for your stable. Last season finishing third on the premiership. You're currently third on this year's premiership. Quite extraordinary, I guess, your rise. And what do you put it down to? Is it growth in numbers, getting better quality horses? What are you putting it down to, the success?
Oh, probably a little bit of both. It's competitive though, Sydney. I don't hide that fact that it's tough racing week in, week out, and some of the competition's outstanding. So we've really had to sort of continue to try and step up, and that's one thing I did at the sales last week. And even at Warwick Farm, it's super competitive here. We've got Annabelle Neesham. She's going great. Gary Portelli, well, he's got a number of good two-year-olds. Obviously, Godolphin. Even Greg Hickman seems to put his hand up this time of the year, every year. Joe Pride, Matt Smith. Matt Dunn, so even just Warwick Farm, the people we're up against every day, you got to keep on your game, otherwise you're sort of left right out. So I'm lucky. Probably in the past few years, I tend to target a lot of horses outside carnival time, and I think I'm probably a realist in terms of where their level is at. And that's definitely helped accumulate wins and stake money.
Yeah, the results are certainly showing. Hey, Bjorn, I love your input on social media. No one celebrates a win in New South Wales racing, I reckon, better than you. Who runs your social media account? Do you know that he's filming you a lot of the time?
No, actually, it's my wife.
Oh, it's your wife that runs the social.
No, she does. She puts definitely a real slant on it. And she's happy to take the mickey out of me too, which I'm not as happy about, but I think she really enjoys that from time to time, and thoroughly deserved as well. But no, we try and keep it real and keep everyone informed with what's happening. And it's not always easy. There's definitely highs and lows in this game, but I tell you what, there's no better place than training racehorses in Australia, let alone Sydney. So very lucky to be here.
Oh, you're a great asset to racing, Bjorn, and terrific to see you and the stable going really well this season. Keep up the good work and hopefully a few winners in the week to come. Thanks for joining us this morning on the Big Sports Breakfast.
Thanks. Thank you.
Bjorn Baker joining us this morning. A big hour still to come. After 7 o'clock, we're going to be talking to Cronulla Sutherland Sharks coach Craig Fitzgibbon about the upcoming season. Roger Rashid also will join us in the next hour to talk day two of the Australian Open and what happened on day one. Brad Davidson will try to find us a few winners in the racing game over the next couple of days. Dan Smith, Sydney Thunder assistant coach, will talk about the BBL, and DJ Velasevich about the Sydney Kings as well. A big show still to come. It's the Big Sports Breakfast Summer Edition with Jamie Rogers, Adam Pengelly and Ryan Phelan.